door, slam shut, and it's on.
That's pretty darn creepy.
Listen, this is gonna sound totally crazy, and I know that, but I'm having this feeling lately that maybe whatever happened to us when we were little, I think it's starting again.
I don't want to talk about this, Christy.
I just remember being scared all the time.
Whatever it was, it thrived on fear. The more we paid attention to it, the worse it got. You need to leave this alone.
Welcome to Now Playing's Paranormal Activity Retrospective Series.
You promised me you weren't going to mess with that stuff.
You cannot run from this. It will follow you.
Hosted by Arnie.
They just about think he's the coolest guy ever.
Jacob.
I know that elders like Jacob can feel kind of intense, but as long as you stick with me, you'll be fine.
And Stuart.
There are these malevolent evil spirits that only exist to cause pain and commit evil for their own amusement.
This podcast will contain harsh language, movie spoilers, and may try to scare you with loud, sudden banging.
And you're not in control. It is in control. And if you think you're in control, then you're being an idiot.
Listener discretion is advised.
You know, we can't just let this affect us that much. If we do that, the terrorists win.
Today we're discussing Paranormal Activity, starring Katie Featherston, Mika Sloat, directed by Oren Peli. This is the Now Playing co-host who knows what happens when you sleep, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who's always willing to give you guys a half striptease, Jacob.
Paranormal Activity. This is, as long as we've been around, I think this was like a phenomenon. Like right as we started recording these shows and we were so horror focused, I think early and often we got the memo, we need to do Paranormal Activity. This is in our wheelhouse.
Oh, let's just face it. This movie kicked me in the balls. Let's go back to 2009. Arnie is so gung-ho about the Saw retrospective series, about how every year Saw is the number one horror movie and we have to do Saw. And we ended up doing Halloween until Halloween. And so Jacob came in. We start reviewing Saw at Halloween. And nobody gives a shit because Paranormal Activity came out.
That's always the surprise to me because I'm like, oh, there's like a fifth one? Oh, there's a sixth one now? These black and white grainy security cam movies of sheets being pulled off a bed? People like that? Like, how do we get so many?
Yeah, in 2009, you know, Saw was the number one in every Halloween. They had this thing. If it's Halloween, it must be Saw. And a switch flipped. Nobody wanted torture porn. Now they wanted grainy blue video camera footage and sheets being pulled off beds, I guess.
Although, I want to point out, it's 10 years beyond Blair Witch. Like, found footage wasn't a new concept, but I guess no one had been able to do it. You know, that's what's interesting. Blair Witch couldn't do it. Blair Witch 2 couldn't do it, anyway.
Well, Blair Witch 2 wasn't even found footage.
Well, that's what I mean, is like nobody knew how to expand upon what felt like a gimmick. It was just something you could only do once. And frankly, I felt ripped off. Like when I saw Blair Witch, I went to the movie theater. I got turned away many times. It was sold out again and again. And when I finally got in to see it, all that hype, all of that PR, like it was the viral marketing that was, you know, maybe better than the movie. Because once you get there, I don't know. I mean, I recommend the movie. I like the movie, but it did not live up to the expectations. And this movie, same reaction. Part of why we've never done it is because I saw the first one. I was turned away numerous times when they test screened it throughout 2008 and finally just paid a ticket like everyone else and saw it at LA movie prices, I think $15. To see this movie and the billing, the poster.
Paranormal Activity is one of the scariest movies of all time. You will be affected as it's hard to ignore the imprint it leaves on your psyche. Nightmares are guaranteed.
Wait, did someone say this or this was just the blurb? This is just the marketing?
No, that was a quote from, what was it, Bloody Disgusting?
Okay, someone got paid. I couldn't think of a more untrue statement ever.
I'll say this, overpromised. I definitely walked away going, I don't know if that was a good movie or a bad movie, but it was not some, like, seismic shift in the horror genre. I have been told that what had been done on a minuscule budget had changed the face of horror, and I don't know. Like, it just felt like a P.T. Barnum stunt. I really felt like I had been had, and I was like, we can never do this series. It's just nothing but Clapper the movie. Like, lights come on, lights come off, noises in the dark. No.
I remember you saying that, and I never saw the movie because of it. I mean, it may seem surprising to our listeners because, Stuart, you and I often have differing opinions on movies, but if you say something's really not worth my time, I often, you know, listen to that. And you were so anti-Paranormal Activity, I was like, all right, there's no way. I'm just going to stay away. You said we could have the same effect if we sat in a room and turned a lamp on and off and on and off. And I'm like, all right, that sounds really shitty.
I would love to take the credit for claiming why you didn't see it, but you hate PG-13 horror.
This is PG-13?
Yeah, of course it is. What do you, like, extreme use of baby powder?
I don't even know if it goes up to 13. It might be lower.
You know, if the Conjuring movies can be rated R for intense scares.
Another lie?
I think you could give this one a rated R.
There's no R here. There's no anything. You could put this on YouTube. Like, it probably should have been on YouTube. It probably was destined for YouTube, except YouTube wasn't quite a thing yet. But yeah, let's put it in cultural perspective. 10 years after Blair Witch, nobody had done it. I think we had like maybe three examples of it kind of working. Sort of. I mean, I'll call out Open Water. I don't know if you guys saw that one. Not technically a found footage movie, but it's the one where like the couple go scuba diving and then they get left and they're like bobbing in the water.
Oh, yeah. That one's creepy.
I didn't realize that was some type of form of found footage.
Well, I mean, found footage is when someone's holding the camera, so technically it's not. But it was non-professional actors on a super low budget filming themselves in a dire situation and making big bank. Like, that made $30 million. And that was just some people that went out on a boat and bought a camera. Like, that was it. REC, R-E-C. It's a kind of a European phenomenon. I don't think it got that big here, but it was a Spanish movie that was zombies and it's all about running around a place. Like, everything was filmed by a handheld.
Yeah.
They remade it as Quarantine, and I don't think it was quite the success here in America as that. And then we did have already covered Cloverfield, which is a cheat. Like, it's sort of a found footage movie, but really it's like a $30 million Godzilla J.J. Abrams thing. Like, it doesn't really count because it's not really the low budget, we just did it with our camcorder kind of aesthetic.
Yeah, that actually had a like studio behind it and money.
But this movie cost $15,000, and this movie made $200 million.
That's like better than Dogecoin, I think.
I lost money on Dogecoin, thank you. That's a sore subject.
Yeah, cryptocurrency is not my thing.
But yeah, that is more profitable than Blair Witch. It has usurped its predecessor.
Yeah, this thing in America, it grossed $108 million. I think Blair Witch in theaters did $140. But overall, and again, what did Blair Witch not do? Become a franchise. They've tried twice, and nobody's really going to see those sequels. But this thing, for several years, kept producing other $100 million making movies. And that's why we finally just couldn't ignore it. We're here because the seventh one has premiered on Paramount Plus. And we are going to just get this out of the way.
Wait, I thought you said this was a successful franchise. Yeah.
I have to laugh at Paramount Plus. I mean, it's not one of the big players.
Well, maybe not, but that's maybe the point. It needs all the help it can get. So if you can only see the new Paranormal Activity movie on this streaming service, well, I mean, Halloween Kills tried that. I mean, I guess it was some kind of boost for Peacock. Paramount could probably use more exclusives. And I do think Paranormal Activity, or at least when it started, 2009, this was all the rage. I think you're right to cite that this really ended the torture porn phase of horror and really opened the floodgates to a lot of found footage came after this. A lot of people tried to copy this movie, and nobody did it more profitably than Oren Peli, who I just want to point out is not even a filmmaker. He is an Israeli computer programmer who moved to San Diego from Israel and kept hearing strange noises in the night and said, I'm going to set up a camera and find out what's keeping me up. And I think it was like raccoons or something. Like, he didn't believe in ghosts. It was nothing paranormal that happened. But from watching that footage, he said, you know, it's kind of creepy. Maybe we can do something with this. And so he, without a script, like he just kind of like found auditioned, I think he said about 100 people to kind of be themselves, come into his own house. And I guess he doesn't count the remodeling as part of the budget, but he's like, I had to put in hardwood floors because there's a lot of footsteps.
I was wondering that because this is actually filmed in San Diego. I'm like, that seems not likely for...
Oh, it's his house.
Yeah, but you're saying he put those hardwood floors in. That stuck out as not going with that style of house. I know it very well.
I'm not going to get catty, but his interior decoration style is not one that I cotton to, is what I'll say.
I think it's an improvement over what it was, however. I'm just saying, he said that what I did to get the house ready was more than what I did to buy the camera equipment and budget this film. And the crew on this film is me, my girlfriend, and my best friend, and then these two actors. And we hired one professional person that was from the movie world. We had to get a makeup artist because nobody knew how to do the bite marks and the blood that comes later. But by and large, this is something that you and I or anyone could do. This is that level of movie making. It's extreme amateur.
You said when they were auditioning, they were just improvising. Is there a script for this? Or like, I get that there's an outline. But
no, there's no outline. There's no script and there's no outline.
Oh, okay.
He wrote character sketches for what he thought maybe the people would do, but it was largely let them make it up. And they filmed it out of order. It was basically based on stunts. Like, they knew like some of the jumps and all that he wanted to rig. But as far as what was going to happen, that came out organically through the week. This was shot in 1 week.
And let's not forget, that's exactly how they did it with Blair Witch also. There was no script for Blair Witch. They were given scenarios. They were given ideas of what the director wanted, but they were ad-libbing the dialogue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, again, this movie's not about the dialogue. I don't think anyone that would tell you, like, you gotta just wait for this Chekhovian exchanges between this couple. No, that's not a dialogue-driven piece.
No, I'm just wondering, like, when Katie comes up with her backstory, is that the actress making that up, or was there some kind of outline of that?
They filmed 70 hours, and they said we just let things roll, and people just talked and talked and talked, and then I realized how important post-production was. The movie had to be found in editing, and it took years. This movie was shot in 2006. It's not released till 2009, and it really did spend years in post-production, starting with the fact that he put it out in a horror con the next year, and some assistant to somebody said, oh, the audience really likes this. I'm going to, like, recommend that we sign Oren Peli. You know, like, we'll get him an agent. The agent's idea was like, let's just send this, you know, it's about videotape. Let's just send videotapes out to everyone in Hollywood and see who bites. And the one person that called back, Jason Blum. Makes sense, kind of. He's trying to build Blumhouse around this time. He's looking for horror content.
And I didn't realize he was with the Weinsteins back then and with Miramax. He was kind of Dimension before he was Blumhouse.
That's where he started, but I think he was, even at this point, looking to break away. I mean, every assistant is, right? If you're working somewhere for somebody else, secretly, privately, one day you hope to have your own fiefdom and to be able to call the shots. And he's a few years away from Insidious and all of that, but he did come on and say, look, I'm going to help you re-edit this movie. This movie's pretty good. It can be better. And they went back into the editing room and spent a year looking over all that footage and then said, let's bring it to Sundance. This is where we're going to go. This is where indie movies get discovered. And Sundance said, nope, we're not accepting this film.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Sundance took
this film. They had to go to Slamdance, which that's a real thing. I didn't make that up. It's kind of the punkier alternative, still in Utah, but down the hill from Sundance is all the rejected films play at this other festival. And that's where they could get in. And that is where DreamWorks executives saw it and took it to Steven Spielberg, who is, I think, the reason why this movie became the $200 million phenomenon.
Spielberg's people are at Slamdance, not Sundance?
I think they're everywhere. I mean, I think that when you're working at that level, you have your people go and just watch films all the time. And again, they're eager to, because if they can discover a paranormal activity, they're set. They'll be made. Apparently, Steven Spielberg was so scared by this movie, he put it in a garbage bag and would not touch it. Here's the legend around it. He took it home, he watched it in his house, and then strange things started happening in his house and he couldn't get out. Like something paranormal, like sealed him in a room and he had to call people. I don't know, maybe Jason Blum just locked the door, right? He was like, it's evil. This movie is actually evil and I want to buy it so we can remake it. And I think that's really interesting. He never wanted to distribute this movie. He said, this is a really good idea. Now we need to go back and make it a real movie with real special effects and real actors.
Okay, you have now saved Spielberg's image in my esteem by adding that part too. Because, yeah, this is the idea and then you do the real version.
Well, the man who made Poltergeist thought the videotape was possessed, so...
Nah, he's lying. A lot of people should be sued for false advertising in this story.
Yeah, this feels like bullshit to me. I don't believe it.
I mean, it certainly helps sell the movie, right? Steven Spielberg got scared by it, and again, like, maybe it's in a garbage bag for other reasons, but again, he saw enough in it to spend $350,000. I think that's what Oren Peli got for his contribution of the $200 million it's going to make, is he got a fourth of a million.
And he did get to remake the film also. I mean, we'll be talking about this film, but when I'm watching it, all I could think of was Insidious. And then I find out, oh, Oren made that film too.
Well, he's on as a producer. He didn't direct it. He didn't make it. That's we've already covered that series. But Jason Blum. Jason Blum is the reason why we're talking about this movie. Because Jason Blum said, look, Steven, I know so much about this.
Yeah, he knows how to put out as little as possible and bring in as much as possible. That is what Blum is all about.
I mean, you say that in a nasty way, but I do think his talent...
No, he's a great marketer. Yeah, great business model.
Yeah, he has been able to make consistently very low-budget movies be extremely profitable from Purge on. Like, he just knows how to do it. And so what he said is, I think the movie works as is. Will you please let me test market this? Just as is, before you spend any money to hire anybody else, let's just put this out and just see how it plays. And the cards they got back, the audience's responses to it were so positive, they said, okay, we're going to release it, this version, but how do we market it? How are we going to convince people that they're going to pay top dollar for this low-res video?
I may be wrong, but my memory is a lot of night vision camera on the audience showing their reaction for the trailers of this.
Very good. Very good. They started on college campuses. And who else to get hyped by this than by young people who, again, at this time are discovering, watching videos, spending their time probably less in movie theaters and more on YouTube, watching raw footage, watching themselves perform. And yeah, they love this movie. And they got a lot of good footage of people watching this movie and jumping in unison and screaming. And so they only opened this movie in like 30 theaters. You know, every week they would add more and more and more. By the time it's released that Halloween week and Beating Saul, it had already been out for a month and a half. But they knew that it was going to take word of mouth and hype to really convince people that this was a real movie and not a doodle that needed to then be doused in millions of dollars.
And again, it worked for them, and this has been something listeners have demanded. It did die down when the franchise died down, but I know a lot of people have wanted us to review this, and the thought was it would be all Red Arrows, so we will see.
Yeah, I'm not all necessarily. I mean, again, this movie was nominated Best Feature Film, the Independent Spirit Awards. It lost to Crazy Heart, the Jeff Bridges country movie that I don't really like.
This and Crazy Heart were competing for the same award?
Apparently. Best first feature.
Okay. I mean, I could put out a first feature.
But could you get nominated for best first feature?
I mean, go to the really slow pogo dance fest. You know, I just keep going down and yeah, I'll find one eventually.
I'm not going to take anything away from the success of this movie. I think it's inarguable. This guy struck on a really good idea. But I do want to point out, as we talk about the future movies, Oren Peli will not be directing any of them. The baton will be passed to Hollywood. And I think that we'll be interested to see this expand because I have only seen this movie. I only know what happens in this movie. And this movie only feels like a beginning. Honestly, an extra featurette that you would put on a DVD that would be included with the real movie. Again, it's hard to shake Steven Spielberg's idea that, yeah, maybe we needed to have more.
It feels like a beginning. at the end of this movie, I'm left with the question, where the hell does it go from here? It feels pretty self-contained, but...
Well, we don't know what was attacking them. We don't know where she went. So many questions.
Yes. Is Mika dead or still alive? Yeah.
I think we're getting into the plot, so Arnie, I'm going to go ahead and just ask you, and I'm curious how many words it will take for you to tell us what happens in Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, pull out your thesaurus and look up footsteps.
It's 2006, and day trader Mika has just moved into a new house with his girlfriend Katie. When the movie starts, Mika has just bought a prosumer-level video camera to try and capture on tape some strange goings-on in this new house, such as noises in the night or Katie's keys being in the middle of the floor when she swears she left them on the counter.
Terrifying.
When I misplace my keys, I'm always scared. The camera captures a bit of movement and noise. The couple has over a psychic, Dr. Fredericks, and it's revealed that what torments the couple is not a ghost, but a demon. This demon attached itself to Katie when she was a young girl, and now it's feeding on negative energy and getting stronger. As it's attached to Katie, leaving the house won't even help escape this negative force. Not that I think they could afford to step out of the house.
Maybe it's a Beetlejuice situation. They literally can't. They'll get eaten by worms.
Fredericks recommends calling in a demonologist, but Mika convinces Katie to wait. Mika's intent on capturing the paranormal activity on tape and dealing with the problem himself. Despite Fredericks' warning and against Katie's strong objections, Mika brings in a Ouija board. This attempt at communication invites the demon in. Thus, the activity gets worse with Katie sleepwalking and very loud banging sounds now. Finally, Mika agrees to call in the demonologist, but it's too late. The demonologist is on vacation. Before the demonologist can return, one night, Katie is dragged out of bed. Her blood-curdling screams awaken Mika, who races to her. We then see Mika's dead body flung into the couple's bedroom. Katie walks in, seemingly possessed by the demon, and having presumably just killed her boyfriend. Post-title text tells us Mika's body was found by the police, but Katie was never seen again, as credits roll.
And as we start, a very familiar kind of intertitle for these low-budget indies. Is anyone convinced?
No.
A sucker is born every minute. You know, keep in mind, 10 years after Blair Witch, there were many people that thought Blair Witch was a snuff film. That really was footage that kids had filmed going out into the woods looking for an evil specter. Would anyone that was watching this in 2009 believe that this really happened to a couple in San Diego just a few years before?
I'm going to argue against Jacob and say yes, because...
Yeah, no, I was going to correct myself. A lot of 10 and 11 and 12-year-olds who probably were frightened by this would have probably believed that as well.
I'd even think, again, I had a friend when Blair Witch came out. He was in his early 20s, and he thought the studio was saying this was a real thing. People who were too young to pay any attention to Blair Witch could have been fooled, I suppose. But then again, I don't even understand how my friend was convinced by Blair Witch. Nobody who's paying attention is going to be fooled. I'll put it that way.
Well, I think the big difference is, yeah, the internet existed, but it was a totally different thing by 2009 when this is coming out. Like, you can look this up and know it's fake. Real easy.
Yeah, they didn't have Mika and Katie go do any interviews. They weren't on The Tonight Show. They hid them. They weren't allowed to do press for this movie. So I think that maybe there was some hope that somebody's going to fall for this. But I think you're right. We're savvier now. A few clicks and almost anyone could get their information right there on their smartphone at this point.
But no, I paid this title no mind, and they start like virtually every found footage film starts. Hey, look, I got a new camera.
I do love that this camera, Firewire.
Oh my god, he
gets so excited over Firewire, and that did take me back to like 2007 when I was super excited to get a Firewire camera because the data transfer was so fast.
Man, I thought Firewire was over by then. I remember Firewire from the late 90s and early aughts, and it never really took off. Thunderbolt really kind of did it one better, but man, this guy is so happy to talk about his Firewire. But yeah, I'll admit though, he's talking a lot about this camera, and I'm trying to find out about who these characters are. And Katie comes home and is like, how much did you spend on this? He goes, well, half of what I made today. I am obsessed with this equipment. I never get a resolution. What did he buy? At one point, he's going to say, this microphone's really worth the money. Well, what kind of microphone is it? Is it shotgun? I mean,
you wanted to see the receipt. You wanted the brands.
If you really want to know, I have the link to the article where Oren Peli talked about how much time he devoted to picking the right camera equipment. It was the research for the film. Keep in mind, computer programmer, never made a film before. So a lot of the year that he spent from the time that he was trying to figure out what the raccoons were doing in his house to actually getting in there with Katie and Mika, he spent trying to find the best camera for this job. And I question whether it's this camera. Again, if you really had any hopes of this playing in a movie theater, maybe it's the right ghostly look, but it's definitely low res. I mean, I definitely think that anyone would look at this stuff as amateur.
I was pretty upset. I have recently moved and had a new home theater done, and I really thought there was something wrong with my projector. It was like so fuzzy and the movement was so stuttery at the beginning of this. And I'm like, oh God, did I buy a piece of shit Sony and not the good Sony? And no, it turned out that this was just filmed on a 2006 Best Buy camcorder.
Yeah, I mean, you could see all the money on the screen, all $15,000. Like, that's the best camera, I guess.
But again, let's turn this around. I think many people would argue, if you're shooting this in a camera that anyone could have, if you're filming it like anybody would, suddenly you're building realism. Suddenly, what you're actually doing is convincing people that this is not a professional shoot. These are not Hollywood people. This is not professional storytellers. This is just anybody that would be curious as to why their girlfriend has had all these stories about faucets like leaking and houses burning down and what have you, and wants to see if they can capture it on a camera. It doesn't feel like someone going out to make a movie. It feels like somebody that's trying to catch someone in an act of crime.
One thing I found very interesting about this movie is that we come in the middle. You know, like Blair Witch and so many other found footage movies I've seen, it always starts with a normal event that we're filming, how, you know, Cloverfield, we're filming a goodbye party, and then something goes wrong. This one's going to jump us in the middle. Things have been going weird, and so that's why they bought the camera. So we're brought in mid-haunt here.
Which I liked. Like, look, I went in with some bias because I just don't think these films, like, what's their gimmick? But I'm finding myself, okay, found footage. You got to have a credible reason for filming this. Okay, you've been haunted. So now that's why we're going to jump in the middle. They didn't have a camera to capture those views. It feels a little bit realistic. Like, it feels smarter than I was expecting at first. So I'm impressed that, yeah, it starts at this point and didn't have some stupid reason for them to just have a camera on when it happened the first time.
And I think you can even see it here in the beginning. It's small and it will gradually build until it's an obvious wedge between these two. But yes, Mika is very excited about this, and Katie is not. Katie has dealt with this. If we were to start at the beginning, we would have to go back to the 80s. And I do believe, haven't seen any of the future sequels, but I believe one of them does actually film her as a child.
Oh.
We will be getting the 80s video. So they're going to go VHS. It's good. The video quality is going to get worse, but maybe we're going to get more answers.
Artie, it's not your theater system. It's the movie. Just repeat that to yourself.
Yeah. So if that's the beginning of the story, then yeah, she doesn't really want to look at what has happened. She's not interested in documenting her life. It's her fiance that wants to know all the details.
That 80s movie is going to be really fucking dull because she's had a couple of experiences. She's later going to talk about how, as a girl, she saw something standing at the end of her bed, but she was apparently able to live with all of that just fine until this. So I can't imagine that we're going to have a whole lot of scares and jumps, and certainly not a bloody ending like this one to those films.
Well, also, that film can't exist because everything burned down in her house when that happened.
You know what? I'm not going to judge a movie before I see it, but I'm very curious to find out some kind of backstory because we're not really going to get it in this movie.
Yeah, no, that was another surprise that we actually do get some lore. Like, I thought this was just going to be all jump scares and doors slamming shut and lights turning off and on. It is all that, but there's a little bit of lore with Katie.
There's no lore.
She's been haunted before. Again, I'm trying, Stuart, I'm trying to give this film compliments because they're going to stop at some point.
I just want to be blunt. They did not create a backstory for Katie in this. They had ideas about jump scares. There is no story to tell about Katie. The story is go watch Poltergeist, go watch The Exorcist.
No, but I agree with Jacob. They tell one. It may be accidental, but I'm going to credit this movie for what's on the screen. And Katie is going to talk when the psychic shows up about encounters she had with this demon as a child. We're going to be told the demon is attached to her. That's why you don't just get the hell out of the house like it's Amityville. They build rules here that make this film function. And so, yes, I'm going to heavily compliment the film for that.
Heavily compliment the film.
Yeah, I'm not going to go that far, Arnie, but I will say it's more than I expected. There are no characters in this. There are no arcs.
Did you heavily compliment Insidious? I don't even think you recommended Insidious. That's the same setup.
It's apples and oranges with similar setups.
Yeah, one's a movie and one's this.
This does not have a lipstick-smeared demon sewing on a black veil and Patrick Wilson mugging it up.
No, it doesn't. And so wait, you're actually saying Paranormal Activity is going to be better for
yes.
you?
Yes. Preview my end thoughts. Paranormal Activity is better than Insidious. Yes. But one other thing I have to ask is, you talked about redecorating this, and very early on, there's something that just screamed out to me, and I don't know if this director is a big Hellraiser fan who had a giant puzzle box piece of art on his wall under which Katie sits, or if that was purchased for this.
No, he was not a horror movie fan.
Okay, well, she is sitting underneath what looks like 9 sides of Hellraiser puzzle boxes while she's doing her beadwork early on in this film. And I'm like, okay, we're going to be seeing a box is opened, a demon will come.
No, you're not going to see anything in this.
Yeah, your mind is actively trying to bring in things that will fill in the giant void where a plot should be. I agree.
I'm not the one who put the Hellraiser box on the wall.
Again, you're calling it a Hellraiser box.
You're the only one that saw it, though. I don't remember it.
Yeah, I don't. Think that that's how they, again, he was just trying to buy anything to put on the walls because he lived in a bare-walled place. Let's talk about the Paranormal Activity, since that's what we're here to do. It's night one. They go to bed. It's a very nice bed. Here's a compliment. What a wonderful bed. It's a nice house. I would love living there. I wouldn't even care if there are footsteps.
For a couple, I mean, I don't know how long they've been together. They've been engaged like 3 years. I guess they're practically married, but I'm like, they're moved in. Like, yeah, put that ring on because you guys are done. You got a bed like that.
He's apparently really well off. I was wondering what these two people did. We'll find out later. She's, I guess, a college student or a grad student for English. He's a day trader. Remember, that was a big thing in the early aughts, was you could just become rich being a day trader. Because I wondered why they have this 3-bedroom apartment plus an office. I mean, they have 3 separate beds in this house, not even an apartment, a house. It is fully decked out. I'm like, even if they started having kids, that's too many bedrooms.
The guest bedrooms, like, all have beds in them. Like, I was shocked. Like, I'm like, even if I had money to do this, I wouldn't, like, deck out all the guest bedrooms. Whew.
No, turn one into an office, or he noodles around with instruments, make a music studio. I don't know why there's beds in every room like this. And the only answer I have is he made way too much money for day trading, and he is just spending it on this house. And the next thing to come in have to be the granite countertops, because I don't know what that tile's doing there.
I'm telling you, that's very 90s SoCal tile. My house had that too. That same tile. I had to look up where this was filmed because I thought it might be the house in the element I grew up in. I'm telling you, that's why those hardwood floors were suspect to me. None of those houses had hardwood.
And again, this is the actual residence of the writer, director, Oren Peli. Like, this is just where he lived. He moved from Israel. This was the house. This is where he heard the sounds. Like, this is where he placed the camera when he was trying to figure out what was making noises. Like, this is all autobiographical. This is not, we were creating characters.
Well, then he is a successful computer programmer to have this much square footage in SoCal.
Yeah, no, I agree. He had $15,000 to throw away on this, on a whim. I mean, he took a week off of work and spent $15,000 to make this. So, all right, again, Paranormal Activity, first night, I know you start small. They're going to start as small as you possibly could. Footsteps, that's it.
You know what, though? Acceptable for night one. I will give it that. Like, footsteps, okay, yeah. I'm not going to complain about it for night one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm easing into this movie. I'm not loving it. I'm not hating it. The characters, this is what you ride or die on in this movie, is how are the characters. They're okay. I like them enough as a couple. And then the footsteps, sure. It's something happened the very first night. It's not like we had to jump to night nine before they were able to catch something on tape. Yeah, footsteps for the first one. I'm okay.
The real question is there anything that they're doing that's making the Paranormal Activity increase? You could read the subtext of this movie, much like it was with Blair Witch, that it's the camera itself that makes them the target.
I think it screams that argument to you. The whole time Katie is blaming Mika for using the camera, and that's making it get more and more, this film's going to claim intense, but at least step around some more on other nights. Like, she blames the camera.
At one point, that psychic is going to say that the demon feeds off negative energy. I wish there was some indication of negative energy here that the demon was feeding off of. As far as I could tell, they're pretty happy together. Maybe she doesn't like how much he spends on a camera, but it's his money and she's not making any, so I guess she doesn't have much say.
But the psychic also implies that just engaging with the demon will give it more control over you. So again, focusing your cameras on it and trying to catch it, that's just feeding it energy.
You want to talk about bad energy? I know none of these people are professional actors, but you fire that guy. Like, whoever's playing the psychic doctor, Mark Fredericks, reality killing. If you were maybe kind of believing this was real in its first 5 minutes, you know that this is all bad performance when he walks in.
The couple have chemistry and are naturalistic, and this guy is high school drama teacher bad.
So stilted in the way he delivers everything.
Yes.
I felt like he was pulling a Marlon Brando and reading like cue cards just off screen. Like, it was awkward.
Again, I guess when you're making this, it was probably like a friend from work or something. Like, you don't put anything into this because you don't think millions of people are going to see it. But I certainly think that if he had the knowledge that he was about to be in one of the biggest horror movies of all time, he would have asked for a second take.
Or just maybe admitted he wasn't comfortable doing this and gotten out of the gig, because I'm sure it didn't pay much, if anything.
Oh, no, yeah, no one's getting paid. Yeah, I mean, I think the actor said they got a couple $100.
Yeah, so no, he is bad. But what are you going to have from a psychic who shows up and you tell him my keys were on the floor?
Yeah, and I love the fact that he's like, oh, I only do ghosts. I don't do demons. I gotta go.
Yeah, this is where some of my problems really start to creep in, is like this couple just so willing to accept like a psychic. It feels weird. Like, there's no debate about this guy's credibility. And then when he's like, oh, you got to call a demonologist, Katie seems all in. And then she's just never going to call that demonologist for a few weeks. Like, this is where I felt like, what is the story here? Like, why isn't the demonologist there the next day if you're so willing to believe this psychic for some reason?
Okay, maybe I'm projecting into this, but what I get from this is Mika is saying no. Katie would love to have the demonologist right there the next day. Mika's the one who... I don't know why. I don't know what his motivation is.
He wants to solve everything. That's what he keeps telling us.
Yeah, and he wants to play with the demon. He wants to chat with the demon. He wants to get the demon on tape. And I don't know why he wants that so badly. I don't know if it's for fame or fortune and glory or just because he's having fun interacting with it. But what I get is he's the one saying no, because she has the history with the demon that came out during the psychic's visit. She would have had somebody there the next day. All his fault.
No, I saw that too, Arnie. I think that's very, very much in the dynamic, and it grows and grows and grows and becomes a bigger problem as the weeks go on. And I can't blame him. Like, I would, this is how I would respond. I think about those early Poltergeist scenes where, like, yeah, you just clear out the kitchen and you start putting tape on the floor about, like, the when it grabs you by the stomach and pulls you across, like, fun. It would be really fun to be in a haunted house. That would be the way that I would take it if this started happening. I would buy a camera and start documenting it. Not for fame or fortune or anything other than just the thrill of touching the supernatural.
I got like Mika, he wants to sell this. He wants that fame and fortune. And yes, but what is he capturing? Like, I could fake all this stuff very easily. Footsteps and like a door slightly swinging. Like, he's super excited about this footage. I am not.
No, but come on. Like, I understand that for we're a paying audience is watching a horror movie that is delivering 0.5 level scares. But think about it if this were your actual house. If that stuff was going on, you would want to tape it and you would be kind of like, wow. Like, yeah, the door kind of moved. Is that a shadow that I see on the wall? Is that a growl I hear buried in the audio mix?
I don't get into this stuff because I don't believe in the supernatural. But Arnie, I know you had a haunted house. Is this striking a nerve?
You know, I mean, we talked about it with some of those Insidious and Conjuring films. I firmly believe I lived with a poltergeist for a little over a decade, and I never once broke out the camera.
Hasn't followed you, though, so it's not a demon.
Right, and also, it wasn't a every night occurrence. You know, guests would see somebody who then they'd turn back and wasn't there, but it was, you know, everybody who came and stayed in our house had an experience, but you could never count on when or where enough to film it.
Stuart?
I never saw no ghost, but I'm not saying anything.
No, but I mean, who stayed at our house like overnight or stayed with us.
Okay, so it wasn't just for visiting for tea.
Although, no, some people who just came over did have something. It's just Stuart was always too busy running with the dog.
True, true.
But no, I mean, I never once thought of breaking out the camera, despite the fact that I believed something unexplainable was going on in that house. But here, I'm fine with them doing it. Sure, I mean, I wish I just understood his motivation a little more, but what he's doing makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah, and if he's got a camera, he's also wanting to make sex tapes. Like, night three, and it's like, time to get it on.
This was a few years after One Night in Paris.
You talk about the chemistry of this couple, and I'm like, yeah, I get why Katie doesn't want to do a half strip for you, Mika.
Really?
He's just so obnoxious.
He is obnoxious. He really is. And he's an asshole, and that's what's going to be proven out throughout this. But I still think for a couple of actors who had to film this whole thing in a week, I buy their chemistry. I buy that they've known each other a long time. I buy their affection as they cuddle in bed together. I buy their playfulness post-coitus.
Bang. I don't buy it for one scene of 1 minute. They feel very much like they're acting the whole time.
Really? I never got that.
I never believed that they were a real couple. Never, 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 never.
I honestly wondered if they were a couple who came in and acted together, you know, for whatever, you know, not professional actors, obviously. I'm not talking Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon here, but just a couple of wannabe actors who also happened to be dating got this movie together. That's how much I believe their chemistry.
Yeah, and I think that that's essential. If you're going to buy into this movie, and I hear, Arnie, you are, then you're going to have to believe what you're watching is real. Because if you don't believe it's real, the stakes aren't high enough. We're spending way too much time on the little stuff, and we need to see major things happening right about now. And this movie is going to say, no, we are going to keep it in the realm of what you can't see and what might just be out of the shot blurred. And that's a long time to spend on that.
Oh my God. I am so engrossed in this. I realized I wasn't blinking. I went long stretches of this movie staring to see if I could see something.
Engrossed? Because I felt like I was watching Bird Box because I ain't seeing no scares.
I can't help it. This is the reaction I'm having is I find myself, my eyes are hurting because I'm straining them looking into the darkness. And unfortunately, the one thing I really dislike is their gimmick of fast forwarding the footage so that you know, they're going to go to bed at, say, 10 o'clock. Something's going to happen at 3:30 in the morning. The clock in the corner is going to go on fast forward so that, obviously, we don't want to watch it in real time, and there's no way to explain and edit.
Yeah, come on.
But because of that, we know something's going to happen when the clock slows back down, because we're not just going to slow back down for nothing to happen. But man, I'm looking for hidden ghosts, and I'm looking for demons and motion.
And what do you find? What do you find when you're looking for all this? Like, I didn't see anything.
No, I didn't either. It was really disappointing.
This film is under 90 minutes. I gave it a half hour, which I think is very generous given this runtime. Like, you got to get out of the first act at some point and escalate. And I feel like there's a lot of footsteps and wall bangs for most of this film. And that's all you're going to get. You're not going to see anything. It's all audible.
It is. But you guys loved that with The Haunting. And that's what I'm thinking of when I'm hearing these bangs.
There were ghosts that you could find.
And you hated that with The Haunting.
But I was thinking of The Haunting and both of your reaction to The Haunting and the fact that it's banging.
A movie you said was one of the worst you had ever covered and now playing. But now that we're seeing it in grainy, shitty videotape, you're transfixed.
I think these actors have more naturalism than the ones from The Haunting.
The ones in The Haunting actually were characters and could act and could engage me.
Yes. There was a story being conveyed, and this is just the premise for jump scare.
Yeah, this is a carnival ride, and the lap bar has come down, but the thing hasn't started moving yet. I want to get off.
Okay, and I will agree, I can't believe that an 85-minute movie can drag, but this proves that it can, because it is around this point where you expect, yes, as you said, Stuart, escalation, and the escalation is, we get to see in fast forward, Katie stood up in the night and just stared at Mika in bed.
I think the escalation is Mika gets an Ouija board. I actually think that what it is he wants to keep trying to communicate. He plays some footage at some point and hears a growl, and it seems like the growl is like he was asking, do you want me to reach out to you with the Ouija board?
Oh my God, he was using Audacity, the same program I was using in 2006 to edit podcasts.
I noticed that.
So to see that version of Audacity on Windows XP, oh, the flashbacks.
And I always do love that. I mean, again, this is what I love about all those movies is what is the machinations that ghost hunters use? How do they use the practical science to aid them in defining the supernatural? I wish there was more of this, frankly. I wish it was a little bit more geeky and we had more clever ways of devising how he's going to communicate. But in a Ouija board, again, okay, yeah, I saw The Exorcist. Don't play with the Ouija board or someone gets possessed.
Yeah, I was much more excited about that microphone he shows up with. Never tells us what it is, just like rattles off some name. But like, that was more interesting. I'm like, Ouija board, really? That's what we're going to communicate through? No, come on, really?
Well, I mean, the only reason I went with it is because it is such a cliche. Because
it's been done a million times. Yeah, exactly.
Right. As is every choice made in this movie.
Yeah, I remember as a kid having the Ouija board and thinking I'd be able to commune with spirits, and my friends and I all said, swearing we're not the ones moving it as it moves around the board, you know. So I went with that, and, you know, it's an okay effect. I was shocked because I know what movie I'm watching. When they have the fight about the Ouija board and leave it there and the camera's running, the planchette moves around by itself. Okay, whatever. Magnets, remote control. I kind of wonder how they did that. It starts a fire. I'm like, okay, I'll give them some cool points. I don't know how they started that fire.
Are you being serious?
I'm being serious. I don't know. If I were to make this on $15,000, I don't know how I'd start that fire. I'm watching this movie and I am having an emotional reaction. I'm getting tense. I am in suspense, and I can only credit the sound mix because I am in a room. I'm going to completely admit I went in giving myself to this movie. I didn't take notes for this watching. I usually take notes for a now playing movie. I just went into the home theater at night, turned off all the lights, turned up the speakers, sat down, and watched the movie. And around the midpoint, around the time she's staring at them and the planchette's coming out, I find myself a little bit unnerved. I find myself slightly tense, and I'm mad at myself because I'm like, why is this movie? It's obviously puppeting me. It's doing these things in such an obvious manner that I should be resistant to them, and yet I'm getting unnerved. My only explanation is that I bought into the realism of the couple, and the found footage nature just kind of brought me in to the point where maybe I didn't feel like I was detached from it the way I do a lot of movies. I wasn't judging it the way I do based on a lot of movies because I'm not looking at the framing, I'm not looking at the arcs, because it does just feel like I'm being brought into their life. I think I'm judging this more like I would be judging one of those Mysteries of the Unknown TV episodes with the bad reenactments than I am, you know, if I were watching Jurassic World 2.
So what I'm hearing you say is, I really like found footage.
Which I never say.
Yeah, I know, that's why you're confusing us.
I'm just trying to connect. What I'm hearing you say is, this technique works for me very well, despite my early resistance to it. I actually can be very creeped out by a door slightly moving or a grumble in the dark.
When it's done well, yes, I go back to Blair Witch 1. Blair Witch creeped me out in the same way in 1999.
You didn't love that movie though, right? It was all like a mediocre. Like, I don't remember any of us go like flipping for that movie.
No, not now. But back then, oh my God, I was so into that movie. And it really did, like, I was living alone and being alone at night in my apartment as I turned out the lights and went to bed in dead silence, that movie weighed on me. Blair Witch. And yet when I watch Diary of the Dead, no, that doesn't do any shit for me. That just annoys me.
I think the found footage, again, Carnival Ride, and don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, but it's something that's tapping into primal emotions more than, yeah, judging it as a piece of cinema.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening to me is I'm sitting there and intellectually I'm mad at myself. I'm like, why are you not blinking? Why are you so tense? And yet I'm having an emotional reaction to this movie that is beyond what the movie is actually doing. And yet I'm also really into the story. I'm curious, how far can they go? What will they tell us about this demon once the Ouija board catches fire? And
absolutely nothing.
We're going to find out that it's, you know, not a human entity. I mean, demons, I think, could have human feet. This is going to have cloven feet or three big toes.
These just feel like obvious choices. Like, there's, these are, of course, like, would you expect it to be anything else?
And also, this is like, we're almost at the end. Like, this is a big reveal. Powder feet footprints, like, that's all you got for us? Okay. I don't even care what the shape of them are at this point. I'm so upset that this is as far as you're going to take it. And I was watching this with my wife, and at the beginning, I was like that, because there's no audience that's going to mind if I talk or turn on my phone. So I'm like, oh, did you hear that? Oh, there were some knocks there. Like, I was doing that at first. I'm like, oh, there's some more knocks again. Oh, there's some more footsteps again. Oh, she's standing there staring again. Like, yeah, I was there at first. I was going to give myself to it and get into it, and then they had nothing to offer. This should have been a YouTube short.
I think one of the things that got me is for the second half of this movie, the bass is rumbling just slightly, just creating this sub-thunderous noise that's keeping the room vibrating ever so slightly.
I wondered about that.
And I think just doing that, I've got 4 10-inch subs going in my room, okay? And while this doesn't have the surround sound I'd really hoped for, I went in hoping that I'd hear sounds behind me.
Surround sound? Yeah.
But I did have this constant, unsettling rumble of bass that was going on, and I truthfully believe that it is part of just that background sound that it had going that was getting me involved.
I had a question about that, because they definitely, like, every time it's time to film at night, I couldn't tell whether it was just room tone or whether they were actually layering in some kind of,
yeah,
like,
I thought it was room tone.
There was some kind of thrum of, like, I just kept writing thrum. There was like a
mm-hmm. it increases. It gets, you know, the first night, there's only just that hair of it, and it comes up at one certain point, and it's kind of funny because my subs auto power off, and it's just at one point in the first night, there was just this pop as all my subs kicked on mid in the night there, but then they were on for the rest of the movie, and as the movie progressed, more and more bass came in, but yet it was always such that it could be mistaken for room tone, except normal room tone doesn't kind of shake my chair. All right, let's focus a little, if we can, on characters.
There aren't any.
No, I agree with Stuart. There are some.
All right, so we know a few things about Katie. Her original house burned down, and for reasons, this house didn't burn down. Like, the thing caught fire, but the house didn't burn down. I guess because Oren Peli didn't want to be homeless. He wasn't willing to be homeless for his art. But that does feel like, Demon, you should have gone for it, right?
But then he wouldn't have ever gotten what he wanted.
What does he want?
According to the psychic, what he wants is Katie.
The psychic that doesn't know anything about demons, but yes.
And why does he want Katie, though? That is one thing we'll never know, why he's followed her around since she was 8.
Yeah, he could have had her at many, many points, I would think. Maybe there will be answers. Here's the thing. I know that they will have to retrofit concepts in here, but just looking at what this is a roadmap to. So Katie, when she was 8 years old, she had a little sister named Chrissy, and she was 5, and something black and shadowy stood at the foot of her bed, much like she will stand, I think, in front of Mika while he sleeps. Something black and ominous was doing that to her.
Now, I will admit, I didn't know where this movie was going to go, but
nowhere.
I did start wondering, maybe we've been watching too much Stephen King with Gerald's Game and Dolores Claiborne, but I thought the dark presence at the end of the bed might be like their father molesting them or something. You know, 2 little girls with a dark presence at the end of their bed. That, to me, I thought might be going someplace all too human evil, not demonic evil. But no, I guess we're just supposed to think it's a demon.
No. I definitely think sexual violence is being threatened here. I definitely think the fact that it wants Katie, the fact that it climbs under the covers with Katie, like it definitely feels predatory in that way. Like it wants, yes, her for, there was a movie Barbara Hershey made in the early 80s, I think, called The Entity, about a ghost that raped her or whatever. It's kind of like an Exorcist ripoff. I definitely got like vibes of like, this is what the demon ultimately, it wants to defile her. That's definitely what I'm sensing with each night. It's getting closer. It's moving into the bed. It's getting in there. And yes. And the other thing that we know about Katie is that there's a picture above this bed that when they saw those footprints, they followed it all the way back to the crawl space, and a picture that in no way should be placed up there in the insulation is of her.
This little moment, it's not really a scare, but I thought it was a neat little development. I'm like, it got me back into the film for a couple minutes to see where it'd go. But yeah, I did like that there was a callback to that fire in her house and there's this burned up picture. Yeah,
I think they're going to jump on that. I'm expecting it. I'm expecting to find out that Katie, maybe it was just her little sister, but there is something that's clinging to her that's small.
And they do throw a twist into all this lore. They give us a little bit more where they find Diane. Perhaps that was one of the names burned onto that Ouija board that Mika found.
We couldn't get a close-up of what it was actually spelling because it was a fixed camera position. But yeah, maybe it was, I mean, again, how would you really know?
Like, yes, I wanted him to explain that.
I'd be doing the exact same thing, though, that he did, which would be watching that tape and trying to guess what letters it was going to.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because I'm like, oh, he's got to go back to the tape and figure out what it spelled. Like, I was right there with him. But yeah, this happened to some other totally unrelated person that almost told the exact same story. And then it gets, because they're just, I guess there's no script. What happened to her? They tried to do an exorcism and this Diane died during it?
There's a lot of like, well, what happened to her? And eventually we get the inference that she died. And Katie's like, what did she die of? And I think, we'll get there when we get there. I think she died in the way that the movie originally planned to end. There are 2 endings to this movie. I think the reason why we don't get more articulation on this woman slitting her own throat back in the 1960s is because that's not what most people are going to see.
Okay, because I thought this was to build more tension about getting that demonologist, because you got to get the demonologist at this point. Why are you taking so long to get this demonologist? I don't understand, but like, this is, it feels like Mika is scared.
They're very busy. He's an LA demonologist. Can you imagine his workload?
Oh, I get it, yeah.
I agree, though, that you can't bring up this demonologist. Oh, I know a demonologist. And the demonologist never shows up in the movie. I felt so blue-balled because I kept waiting for the demonologist to show up. And at least at that point, I thought the movie would transform into the third act.
We'd at least get like a third act or something instead of still being in the first act.
Yes.
Guys, hold yourself. You're going to get excited. I have news about the demonologist. I can tell you what he did, but we're going to need to finish this movie first. But there's something that he did. Yes.
Okay. Well, we're very close because, you know, now Katie, I didn't realize it at first, but what we're figuring out is she's starting to get possessed. She went downstairs and sat outside and wouldn't come back in and had no memory of that the next day.
You didn't know that was her getting possessed? I thought that was obvious that that was what was going on.
I thought she was just scared to shit and didn't want to be in that house, and I don't blame her.
And yeah, I did try to play the game of, like, can we in any way see what happens as not paranormal? Is it possible?
I was trying to do that, too, because nothing paranormal happened in this film.
Hey, those keys on the floor, there's no explanation.
Yeah.
Is it possible that she's so angry that Mika won't respect her and keep shoving the camera into their private life that she just snapped? And I just would say that these actors aren't good enough to convince me of that. The story is not having enough nuance for me to see that reading at all. And of course, I don't think that's what they want to, because it's called Paranormal Activity. And at this point, it's happening during the day. That's the other development. They hear glass shattering upstairs. And wouldn't you know it, one of their pictures, the glass is broken. His face is scarred up underneath. What is this about? Well, guess what? You're dead meat, dude. Like, you can't figure that out?
Yeah. That was pretty obvious, is that she's not the target he is with that clawing on his face. I thought she would end up clawing his face. I thought that's where this would end up.
Yeah, you might actually get some scares and gore and horror stuff in this then.
Yeah.
Why are you convinced that that didn't happen?
Good point. Good point.
At this point, it is really starting to feel long. They're like, I'm giggling when people are saying things like, we have to do something. I'm like, you would think.
Okay, and here is where I couldn't do it anymore. I gave myself to this movie, but I had to hit pause. And like, how much more is there? Because I was really, it was escalating, but not at a clip. And the thing is, this thing is ill-paced. There's a reason we have a three-act structure that we like. It's because it feels natural and it keeps you intrigued. And when you completely throw the three-act structure out the window, what you're left with is an audience that has no idea if things are really escalating and we're near the end or if it's still just beginning. So I hit pause and there was 10 minutes left in the film. So I was pretty close.
There's two more nights.
When you got to have the wife like stand there and stare twice, like that's not a thing she does once, but like twice. Oof, yeah. Where is the beginning and the end? There isn't one.
The funny thing is I hit pause like right before the last scene. I had no idea we were that close to the end.
And I know part of the frustration with found footage is, yeah, they can't really develop characters because someone's always got to be holding a camera and that's hard to have a dramatic scene that way. But also, we can't get insert shots. We can't get close-ups. And there's this moment, maybe you guys caught it, where he finds her and she's clutching something so tight that
crucifix.
Her hand is bloody. I think it's a crucifix.
Yeah.
Why would you burn the crucifix?
I don't understand that one bit. I was like, is he burning it because it hurt her? Is he burning it because she was clinging to it? I don't understand why he threw the crucifix in the fire and not the Ouija board.
I mean, that is of all the dunderheaded moves in all of the horror movies I've seen, that might be the stupidest. That's like your one hope, dude. The one thing that maybe might kind of save you, but probably won't even. And you just burn fucking Christ. Okay, well, the demon is going to love you. Get ready to jump in the cauldron. You might as well grab a pitchfork now. I thought it was a crucifix, but I'm like, it couldn't be because that's so damn stupid.
And also around this time, Katie has a bite on her back. Then you said they brought in a makeup person. Decent makeup.
I mean, again, who isn't thinking about Poltergeist? And again, all the movies we've seen before, this movie is not doing anything new. What it's trying to do is paint it in a different light by saying that it's real now, that it's left the movies and become this artless document that's happening to real people. That would be the only reason why you're carrying all that goodwill from all those other movies into this moment, because they're not doing anything to justify it or make it scary. It's just, okay, she's bit. Yeah, of course she is. Hooves. I mean, who doesn't know this stuff? Again, they made it up as they went along, and they're not even horror fans. So that's exactly how it feels like. People that have a very tenuous connection to horror trying to do what they know happens in the genre.
Maybe Reno damn this film then, because it's hitting all its objectives. Look like a horror film made by people that know nothing about horror. Mission accomplished. A+.
Yeah, let's just get to it. Night 20, she got dragged down the hall. And night 21 is, well, he's going to chase after her. And that's pretty much, I mean, it's been coming for her this whole time. Again, we've seen silhouettes and it was breathing next to the bed and all of that. Again, it feels very predatory, very sexual in its desire for her.
When she got dragged down the hall, I'm like, how the fuck did they do that without CGI? How did they get her dragged down the hall? Because this actress is not some trained actress in mime who would be able to fake be pulled down a hall. She's not that level. So I was really dumbstruck by the little bit of magic going on, you know, practical effect magic that was causing her to be pulled down the hallway. Until I looked up and found out that the ending had $200,000 in reshoots and special effects. And I'm like, oh, that's how they did it.
Yeah, Spielberg won in the end. In the end, Spielberg didn't get to remake the whole thing, but he said, you can't do the original ending. And in fact, they didn't even shoot the original ending. But there are three ways that this movie could have ended. And the original idea, the scripted idea, it was always going to be the same basic idea. Obviously, Mika gets killed. And it's really, how do we dramatize that? One would be that, like, time would just keep going on into day. Like, he's dead. We hear him scream down in the dark. We know he's dead. That friend that came in for one shot, like I think she had a friend named Amber or something like that.
They beaded together, yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. They had the knitting club. She would come in like calling for them and being like, oh my God, call the police. The police would show up. Katie's all standing in her trance by the camera in the bedroom. And she would snap out of it and be like, where's Mika? What's happened? Why am I covered in blood? And then there would be another like footstep, thump, thump, thump. And it would make the cop shoot her. Like she would end up being killed by like a trigger happy cop. And that was the end of the film.
That's scariest of all because it could happen.
Yeah, I don't know if I go to Paranormal Activity to defund the police.
Yes, it would be very timely. I don't think that that was obviously what Oren was going for. And I also think that he himself realized it would just took too long to get to what he was trying to get to. And so what they shot in its original version, you can see it on the DVD. I don't know if either of you did watch the alternate version, but it is Mika going downstairs, screaming, Katie coming back with a bloody knife, walking up so her face is in close-up, and taking the blade and slashing her throat and falling over.
She kills herself?
She kills herself. And again, I would bet anything that if we saw the unedited story of Diane on the website, how did she die? That's probably how she died. It was a very close-ended, this is what the demon does. He comes in, he gets you, he kills your lover, and then you kill yourself, the end. And Spielberg was like, you know what, I got money. If the problem is money, we can just get these people. I know they're not working. I know nobody's like, not even dinner theater is calling up Katie that she's got to take a night off work.
Were they smart enough to hold out for like a lot of money? Like, you need us for these reshoots.
No.
Let's talk money.
You got to figure at that moment, life changed. Because if Spielberg's funding it, it's got to be a union gig. It's going to suddenly, they have to be paid union dues. They've got SAG cards for a minor reshoot.
Yeah, I agreed. It does change your life a bit. So yeah, they probably did make a little bit of coin on this, what we know is the real ending. And I think what is the legacy of Paranormal Activity? If you think about this movie, it is the ending, right? Like, is the fact that Mika gets thrown against the camera, like that hurricane force of it all. They leave us with the right, most memorable impression.
And I hate myself because I'm sitting there and, you know, Katie leaves the room, and then you hear that scream. And I'll give her this, she's got a good horror scream. And then Mika goes running down after her, and I'm sitting there like, brace yourself, a jump scare's coming. Don't give it to this movie. Don't give it a cheap jump scare. Don't give it, oh shit. Okay, I gave it to her.
Yeah, see, I did not give it. I'm like, really? That's all you got? That's your closing scare?
Something was flying at me, okay? I didn't expect that. I
was just so unimpressed. I don't know what they would have had to do to get me to react to the ending here. I'm just like, you can't pull a ghost or a demon out now at this point. Too late. I'm done.
Even if you're loving how much you're jumping, like, you gotta be, like, underwhelmed like this was the story, right? Like, this is, like, that's it? He's just dead?
I also didn't know what was being thrown at first. You know, I knew something was flung at the camera, and just the sheer having something flung at me and so quickly, it did have me startled. But then, yeah, then I realized, oh, that was Mika. And then in comes Katie, all bloody. And then, of course, obviously, I knew CGI was in play when she makes the little demon smile.
Yeah, so stupid. But, you know. Spielberg's right, though. If those were the three endings, this is the most dramatic. It's the one that's going to stay with people. And, again, it's the one that finally tells you anything else you might be able to say. Well, it could be raccoons. It could be the ice maker. But, no. Obviously, to pick up Mika and throw him with such a force, she didn't just go psycho. She got possessed. Paranormal activity is involved. And they do the Blair Witch thing. I mean, this is exactly how Blair Witch ended, where the guy fell over, and we don't really know what happened, and one never was found again, and yeah, who knows? I actually do, because I read the comic book that came out 3 months later.
Oh.
But let's wrap it up first.
All right, well, I'm anxious, so let's get to it. Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Paranormal Activity? Jacob.
You know, despite all my grousing that I've been doing, I really did find this to be a rich metaphor, manifesting the stress caused by going into debt to achieve the suburban lifestyle that Mika and Katie have. I mean, this is just right before the market crash of 2008, and it's already predicting that. We have Mika, day trader, Wall Street, like, not believing, you know, the college student who is also oppressed by their college loans. Like, this such rich subtext. No, this film has nothing. It's empty. It has none of that. If you want to show a horror movie to your kids, like, you could start them like as young as 6 or 7 with this one. And even then, they may have never seen a horror movie because there's no scares in this. And that is the shock to me, is this wasn't scary. It's got to be like this group hysteria thing when you're in the theater and people are jumpy and it's a carnival ride. And so maybe that works for you. It didn't work for me. Maybe my audience I saw this with wasn't big enough to really get me into the mood I was supposed to be in. But yeah, this one, it really makes me cynical because I don't understand how this franchise is so popular if this is where we're starting. Because again, I want escalation. I want characters to be something more than what they're given here. I get that it's limited because it's found footage. Also, that proves how much of a gimmick this is, that it's found footage. Because if you try to tell this story, this exact story, any other traditional way, oh boy, like, it Mangler 3 territory.
You'd have to add more. Insidious couldn't have gotten by on something this threadbare.
Yeah, so this film angered me because it refused to actually do anything. And so I get it. It has worked for some reason, and it might work for your young children. But I'm an adult. I'm going to say stay away from this first one. Though, I believe they can get better. I don't think this is an ominous start. I do think it can get better from here. But this one, skip it. Not recommend.
Stuart.
I mean, I did think a lot about it. What I find really curious is how we can have such intense divergent reactions. How someone can be like, this is the stupidest thing ever, and the other person is like, the most terrifying movie I ever saw. How does that happen? It made me think of another pop culture moment where you remember, like, a decade ago, everyone was playing that sound wave and arguing about whether it was Yanni or Laurel.
Blue dress, gold dress?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, right. I forgot about that one. But yes, it turned out in the case of Yanni and Laurel, it was both words. And I guess our brain gets confused and picks one based on our receptiveness to high frequencies and our cultural understanding of the pronunciation of L and Y. So there you go. They have a name for it. It's called perceptual ambiguous stimulus, and that's probably a better title than Paranormal Activity. I am going to argue that this movie is a biological response, and you will either hear scary or slothful. You will either be left completely fish cold, like I was, or you will be in the thralls of terror that you are watching horror made real. And I find this incredibly boring. I find it incredibly uncreative and just tedious. Again, I'm not even angry about it. I watch it in absolute confusion that anyone that could be remotely scared by anything that they see in this movie. And I love slow build horror. That's the really funny thing is I love all the things they're referencing. Poltergeist, Exorcist, you bet. I want to believe that there's a raw footage version of those movies that could scare me just as much. But this is not a story. It's a technique. And so if you hear slothful, there's nothing else to impress you. The acting's not good. The house decoration is not good. There's nothing else here for you. You either believe it or you don't. And so I don't know whether to recommend it or not. You won't know what your central nervous system will do until you expose yourself to it. So you're either going to have one reaction or the other. But I can just tell you my reaction is this is not good horror.
I kind of like your explanation there, Stuart, because it makes me feel less bad for having the reaction I did to this, in that it's some biological reaction over which I had no control, because intellectually I'm sitting there during this movie and going, this is threadbare. This is dragging. I had to pause to see how much more of this is there. Not that it's unendurable, but that I just wanted to know when things would finally build to a crescendo. And yet, I am being completely honest with what I'm saying next, and feel free, come make fun of me on Facebook, go right ahead. But when I turned this movie off, I couldn't grab the remote to turn the light on in the room fast enough. And then it was past midnight. I was alone. I'm in a new house, still sort of new to me. I had to walk in the dark through this house I'm not all that familiar with to my bedroom. And I sat in that chair procrastinating on that walk for a good 20 minutes. This movie unnerved me to the point of not wanting to walk in the dark to my bedroom.
Wow, it really sounds like it imprinted something on your psyche, just like that poster proclaimed it would.
And a movie that does that to me, I say is a success. It's funny because a couple days before watching this, I was watching somebody talk about horror movies of the 80s, and I remembered being scared of movies in the 80s, and I'm like, God, it's been so long. I'm never going to be unnerved or scared or made afraid of the dark by a horror movie again. I'm so old, I'm so jaded, and then I watch this and it fucking happens. And so a movie that gets me unnerved, and it's a horror movie trying to get me unnerved, it succeeded on a biological level, so I'm going to give that a recommend, even though I agree. I can't argue with your guys' flaws that this isn't even written, let alone poorly written.
This laxative made me go diarrhea. It fulfilled its biological function. Recommend.
But I agree with Arnie. If it scared you, you should recommend it. Like, you definitely are. If it's a horror movie, I guess if it's a comedy, then no, that's not a recommend. But yeah, if the design of it was to get under your skin, and it did, then it really doesn't matter how little story there was or anything else. Nothing else matters but that.
Yeah, and that's why I can recommend this, but not Insidious and not Conjuring. Those movies never got under my skin the way this did. And this one, it did. And if I'm thinking it's got to be a fluke, it's got to be an anomaly, I'm not thinking that every single Paranormal Activity is going to hold me in its thrall the way this one did. But this first one worked on that base level. And so, yeah, I have to give it a green arrow for that alone, because it made me feel something I thought I was incapable of feeling again.
Well, interesting to see that we have so many movies to see if that keeps going.
Yeah, because I expect these to be better than this, and so scarier?
No, why, Jacob? Why would you think that it's going to get better? There's no way it's going to get better. I'm just going to argue it's probably all red arrows for me. It's not even the point. It's my interest. What I'm interested in is, what do you do with this?
They gotta know, they gotta actually have, like, visual stuff. Maybe not. Maybe if you spend $15,000 and you get rewarded with hundreds of millions of dollars, you don't come to that realization that you need more, because that's working. So why fix it?
Here's the problem. The more you're asking for is what's going to undermine my reaction and just going to make it a movie instead of an experience.
Yeah, I want that.
So you're saying that if Spielberg, what I think is, we're going to get the movie Spielberg wanted to make and release, the redo, I think that's what we're going to get coming forward, but Arnie, you're saying that would never have the same impact.
No, I mean, I've already seen Insidious. I mean, I've already seen so many medium to high budget horror films that just don't affect me at all.
But this will, I mean, the difference, of course, is this is going to retain that raw footage. We're going to get time lapse. We're going to get that blue filter, night vision look. Like, they're not dumb enough to throw that away. I don't know if we're going to get footage that isn't that. It would be really hard, I think, to tell six more stories where it's only raw videotape, but they'll always keep that, right? There's no getting away from that.
There was no such thing as night vision in the 80s. If there's an 80s period piece in here, I'm curious how they'll try to explain that away, but maybe he's a filmmaker and has high-end stuff and not just the Rico that my dad bought in 1986.
I can't wait to have that conversation.
Let's play that game, just for briefly, just to humor us, because none of it, this is fun, like this is rare. None of us have seen the rest of the series. I haven't seen it, you guys haven't seen sequels, we have no idea what's going to happen. What would you think they're going to do?
I figured this story is closed-ended. It's a closed loop. I mean, that's why when you guys were saying there's so many questions, that I'm like, no, this story's over. The only thing we could have is another haunting. New people, new demon.
No, same demon, because we're going to find out at the beginning in the next one. Oh, let me open the paper. Headline, Katie whatever, dead, sliced her own throat. And now we're into the family of the new demon. Same demon, new family.
Okay, I'm going to stick with Katie. I think Katie's Freddy Krueger.
You think she's coming back?
Oh, yeah. I mean, with the fangs and all that? Yeah.
The actress, though, or are they going to be new Katie?
Why pay someone more expensive?
That's the thing. Like, she can't act, but hey, made $200 million on this one, so why not bring her back? I can't argue with that.
Here's my prediction. She has a younger sister. The younger sister comes to the house to find out what happened to Katie, and paranormal activity continues, and Katie is the one standing over the bed sometimes. Like, I think you deepen the story of Katie.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We got to know what that demon was. We got to get a name. We got to find out shit about that demon.
Yeah, no, we'll find out more about it.
I would think if you're making a real movie, a studio production, you don't call these people back. You get new people.
I mean, when I say like a studio production, a $3 million, Paranormal Activity 2 will have a $3 million budget. They didn't like drop the money bomb.
That's a lot of money compared to $15,000.
It's not a lot of money for any kind of horror movie, even a low budget one. But I did promise answers, and maybe the reason why I'm thinking Katie's a factor is the movie came out, you know, in wide release October 2009. By December, you could download for free, apparently, from the website. I had to pay 99 cents now. I had to go to Amazon and buy it. But Paranormal Activity, The Search for Katie, will give you 40 more pages of the story written by the guy that did Happy Death Day. And guess who shows up? The demonologist.
Oh my God.
Finally, Dr. Avery's.
Yes, Johann Avery's comes to the house after they're dead. Very helpful to poke around and find out what's going on, and encounters a cop that is part of a cult that is protecting the demon. And he goes to inspect Mika's body, and the scratches that are on the photo match the injuries on the actual corpse. So those abrasions were a prophecy. It doesn't really do a whole lot. He talks to people. He reminds you of things that happened in the movie. He plays some of the videotape. But it leads me to believe that maybe he'll be the main character when we get to part two. Or at least, at the very least, the search for Katie continues.
Hmm.
But we won't know that for two more weeks. We got a different kind of Paranormal Activity next week, because this weekend, Ghostbusters are back.
I'm excited. It looks like a real return to what I loved of the 1984 film. And Paul Rudd, sexiest man alive. How can I not be enchanted?
It looks nothing like the 84 movie. It looks very sentimental.
Yeah, it's Stranger Things.
Yeah, I don't see. I think of the 84 movie as being like Meatballs. It was like a Bill Murray comedy. And this looks very much like a nostalgia trip.
Get out the violins. We're going to pull some heartstrings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it's going to play less as comedy and more. I don't know. You could be right. Paul Rudd is a comedic actor. I'm sure there'll be some funny stuff. But the vibes I've been getting from the trailers is all feels. You know, it's directed by the son of Ivan Reitman. And I think there's going to be a whole lot of melancholy and pathos about generations. That's the vibe I'm getting anyway. But I still want to see it. Don't get me wrong. I have enjoyed all three Ghostbuster movies, and I hope to keep the streak going with the fourth one.
So that'll be out next Friday for people who donated for Ghostbusters way back in 2016 or who went the green slime level this time. And I think we offered it last year when we thought it was going to come out as well. If you donated to hear the Ghostbusters reviews to us via PayPal, you're going to be getting this review as well. Or if you donated just at platinum level or gold level, you can always add to your donation and hear all those other bonus podcast reviews of A Quiet Place, Bird Box, Candyman, all the way through the entire Tom Cruise series. All the details are at nowplayingpodcast.com/donate. But no matter what, thank you for your donation and helping Now Playing and joining us on this Paranormal Activity series. I think just the guesses here of what is to come next is kind of exciting in that it's going to be a completely new exploration, and I have very different ideas of where this would go, so I have no idea what will happen when I press play for Paranormal Activity 2.
All I know is it pleased audiences again. It was a big old hit, and so what did they get right? What did they retain? What were they able to duplicate? Even Blair Witch can't claim that. Nobody ever made a sequel to found footage that worked. And so let's find out if it does.
And Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. And now, let's get back to the present.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
You know, I've heard of spirit photography before, but I've never actually seen it in person.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
We're so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This isn't Casper, the fucking friendly ghost you're chasing, man.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders.
I think that probably was illegal in Kentucky, you know, the 12 states.
They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
A final ritual, and that's where he's going to be.
Is she sure? Then we should call the cops.
Call the cops and tell them what?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck this shit, I'm done.